So I wanted to talk a little bit this afternoon about some of the work that we've been doing at West Virginia University in applying the equal area spline function to legacy cell data. So, and in this case, the legacy data that we've been using is housed in the StatsGroup 2 database. So I assume by now, because we've heard a little bit about it this morning and this afternoon, that when we talk about splines, we're talking about basically depth functions, you know, the variation, modeling the variation in some soil property down a profile. So splines themselves, you know, their use is not really new. The original splines, you know, were hand-drawn, freehand, you know, curves through data points, and that example that comes from Yenny's work, 1942. Later on, work began on modeling splines using quantitative techniques. This work sort of began in the 60s and 70s, and there was work done on using exponential decay functions and polynomials and things like that. The disadvantage of techniques like these is that any local variation in the soil profile, the value of the property down the profile affects the quality of the fit of the spline everywhere, because they fit a single curve down the profile. So the solution seems to be in the form of these equal area depth splines, and they consist of a series of quadratic polynomials with knots or joins at the horizon boundary. So those rectangles over here represent soil horizons, and the magnitude of the soil property or the value of the soil property is on the x-axis over here. How do I get rid of the mouse now? So soil horizon, and the idea Alex showed this before earlier too is that they're equal area so-called because the area above the mean to the spline should equal the area below the mean to the spline. That preserves the mean value of the property through that horizon segment. So for the kind of work that we're trying to do, they're particularly useful for standardizing property estimates taken at soil horizons into a set of standard depth increments. As you can imagine, you have three different profiles, and the horizon boundaries all occur at different depths in each of those profiles. So I'm working on the globalsoilmap.net project. The project specifications, I think someone may have mentioned this earlier, indicate outputs at six different standard depths, standard layers, 0 to 5 centimeters, 5 to 15, 15 to 30, 30 to 60, 60 to 100, and 100 to 200 centimeters. The aim of the work that I'll be presenting today is to apply the spline function to the StatsGroup 2 components, the soil components of the StatsGroup map units. Now, the mapping that we're doing today isn't, in this presentation, isn't really predictive per se. What we're doing is basically making weighted means maps of total clay content, in this case, at the global soil map increments. So methodology, so what we do is extract the property data from the soil data mart for the components of the StatsGroup map units, fit the splines to those components, and then make estimates of the clay content at the global soil map depth increments. We need to deal with single horizon components, and I'll talk a bit about what that means in a minute or two. The next step then is to, once we have the estimates at the standard depths, is to calculate a weighted mean at each depth increment for each map unit. And then obviously we want to visualize the results. Now we're using the representative values from the soil data mart. For most properties, there is a representative value and an upper and a lower value. We're using the representative value. StatsGo reports clay in terms of percent. Global soil map specifies clay content, particle size for that matter, and in grams per kilogram, so we get there by multiplying the percentage by 10. So each of our soul components have a number of horizons, and so we fit this line and then get our estimates at the standard depths. So we need to deal with these sort of single horizon profiles. Most of the time, if we're lucky, you know, each of our soul components, you know, will have a number of horizons, and each of those horizons will be populated with some property data, clay content in this case. But sometimes we'll come across some components where they may possess more than one horizon, but only one of those horizons is actually possesses data. This could be because, you know, maybe there's some bedrock lower down, or because they just didn't collect data at particular horizons. Doesn't always have to, the populated horizon doesn't always have to be the surface, but it often is, usually is. So we can build a spline on these profiles for which we have more than one horizon of data, but not on these ones. So as a bit of a workaround, what we've been doing, we take the horizon that we do have data for, and then assigning the depth increments that we're looking at with that pass through part or all of the populated horizon with that horizon's value. So we can still make use of those components. That's pretty elementary, I guess, but just quickly how we do the weighted mean. So one map unit might consist of, for example, three components here. This is, you know, a hypothetical situation for the 0 to 5 centimeter increment. You know, component one might occupy 75% of the map unit by area. So we multiply the component's property value by that proportion, and then sum those to arrive at the weighted mean. Just quickly, for StatsCo 2, for the clay content, there are about 103,000 total components, and of those, 98,000, a little bit over 98,000, actually have clay data. And of those data, of those components, 99% of those, 99.4%, have more than one horizon. 0.6% of all of those components with data only have one horizon of data. So here are the weighted means maps of clay content, and we'll go down the profile. Those white areas are where we have no data, either because the soil is too shallow, or it's water, or the data wasn't collected. So let's go down the profile. So let me go back. Oops. So 0 to 5 centimeters, 5 to 15 centimeters, 15 to 30, 30 to 60 centimeters, 60 to 100 centimeters, and 100 to 200 centimeters. And those maps, I should say, are gridded at 90 meters for now. I guess that doesn't exactly meet the global soil map format, but you know, for visualization purposes, that's sufficient for today. So now, I could be wrong on this, but there's not too many other efforts that we know of that have made a database, if you like, of many different soil properties at sort of a continental extent. You know, of course, with the exception of Sergo and StatsCo, I suppose. So one that is fairly well known, I think, is the Qantas soil project that was done in the late 90s on the original StatsCo data from 1994. And so sort of by way of comparison, I present this map, and it's actually, if you compare the 0 to 5 map based on the splines, it's almost identical. I should have displayed them but side by side, but I didn't. So the Qantas soil project, though, is based on the original StatsCo database from 1994. our data is based on StatsCode 2, which I think is from about 2006 or so. Corner soil, their maps are presented at 1 kilometer resolution. The maps that I presented here are 90 meters, and obviously global soil map, I think someone mentioned, is going to be at, well, 1 hectare estimates on a 3 arc second grid or something like that. Corner soil, there are 11 standard layers, and I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head what all those are. Finer resolution, for sure, than the increments that Global Soil Map is dealing with. So, sort of to sum up, by way of sort of outlining some of the some of the advantages and disadvantages of sort of the work that we've been doing. The equal area spline is nice because the overall fit of the spline, it's sort of a piecewise thing. It's not sensitive to individual horizons. It's nice too because we can estimate the soil property values for any depth increment that we're interested in. We can be really detailed if we want. We could get estimates every 5 centimeters or finer if we wanted to do that. And these are particularly useful for modeling purposes. However, it doesn't really cope with abrupt changes terribly well unless we insert some sort of pseudo horizons to sort of force the mathematical spline to form these abrupt changes, as we see sometimes in, for example, texture variables. It's difficult to model sub-horizons. We've seen not so much with the stats code, but sort of dealing with real measured profiles, if you like, that often contain more horizons than what we see in stats code. Occasionally, we'll have a big horizon with some kind of sub-horizon that's been sampled that occurs within some bigger horizon. And it's sort of difficult to model that with the splines unless we specifically sample for that. But for that matter, all these disadvantages would occur with some of those prior techniques, the use of single curves and so on. Some future work, and I guess this is probably to do more with the mapping than the splines. How do we represent variability within map units? Should we use a range or some kind of weighted standard deviation? All this is doable, of course. How do we represent uncertainty? We're working on some of that stuff right now. And Alex, I think, talked this morning about uncertainty and sort of prediction intervals with the splines as well. For that matter, later versions of the North American Global Soil Map, .NET at least, and Zamir talked about this, we'll try to incorporate Sergo data, but we need to think about that too, because Sergo has more holes, particularly in the West, where it just hasn't been done. So what do we fill those holes with? And then even later on, we'd like to incorporate some disaggregation of particularly the Sergo map units to get at some more higher detail and some more continuous mapping. So thank you.
Surface knot could carry any value. It could be infinite. And you would still find a solution. Well, it would not be infinite. It could be very high, and you still have a solution for that first horizon. So how is that first knot defined in that element?
Right now, it's not, unless you actually sort of insert some kind of some sort of pseudo horizon, if you like, that actually ties the top of the surface of the spline and the bottom, for that matter, to some value, right? So,
supply in what way? It's always higher than the value of the horizon.
It's not unless you actually supply it. So for this work, I don't think we did. We've experimented a little bit with making like a really thin horizon and just assigning it the value of that surface horizon itself. It's probably not perfect either. I think Alex has some comments. Is that right? It's okay if there's not. Well, no, I think if there's... Well, at least it doesn't... We're not... If there's bedrock, if there's no data, we're not giving a horizon data where data doesn't exist. But, yeah, I think if you're dealing with a map unit where there might be a couple of really shallow soils and one that is deeper, then the question is, what do you do? You can't obviously... at these sort of lower depths, you can't do a weighted mean because you might only have one component, but is that then misleading? So I think maybe some sort of these maps might have to be accompanied by some sort of legend, if you like, that for each layer that tells you, what that estimate actually is. Is it a weighted mean, or you're just assigning it the value of the one component that you do have data for, and so on? Does that satisfy your question?